listening to the Tennis.com podcast. And here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Tennis.com podcast. Long time, but we're back here. I'm Ed McGrogan with Steve Tigner. Wanted to catch up on most of the happenings that have been taking place as the fall season has really gotten underway here. We're going to get to Davis Cup, which the final has been settled, and it's certainly a final most people, I think, wanted to see. Also going to get into the WTA, I think, post Lena, post Grand Slam season with a look ahead toward 2015. But I wanted to start, of course, with the latest return of Rafael Nadal, and we were just going over this, Steve, and you know, when I think about Rafa's history of injuries in his past, it's also been a history of incredible comebacks that have not just been successful, but really wildly successful. And I sort of wonder if we should even think otherwise at this point. It just, you know, Rafa wins every year. Rafa seems to back up his place as the king of clay with doing his thing in Roland Garros, and every time he's been out, he's come back and really, you know, taken the tour once again in a stranglehold. So what do you see, is there anything perhaps different that you might think happens this time around, or do you see things turning up well for Rafa once again?
Well, I could, you know, like you said, judging by the history, you have to think he's going to be as good as he's, you know, as good as he's ever been. He's still just 28. He, in 2009, he missed Wimbledon, but then, you know, with knee problems, and there was speculation that he, you know, that could be a career-ending injury. In 2010, he was number one. In 2012, he missed a lot of the year with knee problems again, and then 2013, he was number one. I don't know if he's going to be number one again this time. It's a different injury. He was out for a little less time. It does seem like, with his style of play, he can use a break. You know, he's never been sort of like a Federer type of player who will dominate for an entire year or even for 3 years at once. He will dominate for a period, and then he'll be injured or he'll have a down time, and then, you know, then he comes back. So this would seem to work perfectly for him leading into next year. He'll play Beijing, Shanghai, probably Paris and London, and, you know, which this might be the best chance he has to do well in this time of the year. Usually he comes into this time of the year a little worn down and hasn't really done that well and has never won the World Tour final. So, you know, you'd have to think he has there might be some hiccups along the way, but I would think by then he'll be playing well.
I think it's perhaps encouraging that because of, like you say, his fall season history, indoor hard courts probably the least conducive to his game, that he would choose to come back really at all at this point in the year. Because I think you could definitely make a case for Rafa just writing off this season as, you know, looking ahead really toward 2015. And I think the fact that, you know, his camp, who I think by now, you know, knows exactly, you know, kind of his injury history and what he's susceptible to, the fact that they want to make a full go of this for the rest of the year, I think is a little bit encouraging for, you know, for Rafa's prospects and maybe how they see him coming back. And you know, we'll see how he does in these events, but it was, like you said, pretty interesting to see that he comes back and he beats Gasquet 4-love in a match when he hasn't played in 3 months.
Yeah, that's a perfect opponent for him. He was 12-0 against Gasquet, so it won't always go like that. But he didn't seem to have any. He didn't seem any slower. He seemed pretty much the same. Rafa did, and I'll be interested to see if he plays Djokovic in either of these Asian events. What happens there, because their rivalry has typically gone in streaks where one person will dominate for a short time, then the other person will. Djokovic is obviously, he's number one now. He's been the guy who's been winning those matches. So we'll see whether this could lead to another turn in that rivalry.
Yeah, and that's a rivalry that I think a good way that you put it was, you know, looking ahead at this week's event in Beijing was, it's about the big two, really, and we've had the big three, the big four, but I think your point obviously is that really when it comes down to it, and when these guys are healthy, I mean, this is clearly the rivalry in the game that it is of the moment, and we really can't predict because it's gone in so many and veered in so many directions. And right, and usually, as you say, one person tends to have the upper hand in this, and you can clearly tell who it is. And I guess we'll actually, it'll be just curious to see what Djokovic really ends up doing this fall as well, with you know, a lot of heart, a lot of things off court he'll be dealing with, and really kind of a disappointing end to the U.S. Open for him, and a summer post Wimbledon in general where it just didn't look like the same guy.
Yeah, as good as Rafa could be, I think Djokovic could also, he could be dominant in this time of year. Last year, that's what happened. You know, that's what happened in 2013. He lost to Rafa in the U.S. Open, and then in the U.S. Open final, and then he didn't lose another match. He's coming off a kind of a down period that ended at the U.S. Open. He loves this time of year. He's 20-0 in Beijing. So we'll see. What those two guys end up doing the rest of this fall will be interesting.
Before we move off to the WT, actually, I wanted to just bring up, I mean, we saw Marin Cilic win the U.S. Open and look great doing it, and making a lot of other great players, you know, really look kind of humbled against him at his absolute peak there. Clearly, that was the best we've seen of him. I mean, we asked this question, I think, back in January after Stan wins the Australian Open. Stan's a few years older than Cilic, of course. I think that there's a difference we can address there. But, you know, what do you see from Cilic, I think, going forward? I mean, maybe not even this fall, but really kind of the long-term view of him. I mean, are we thinking that Cilic has, you know, as good of a shot as anybody else to kind of bag a second slam, you know, at some point?
Well, if you look at his record, he and Stan had really similar records coming into their Grand Slam wins. They were completely unexpected. Neither had won a Masters tournament. Neither had been to the final of a Grand Slam. Neither had even won a 500 level event. So it was almost as if once they got to the end of the slam, they had no history of losing to the top guys there. I don't know if that had an effect where they were sort of completely free, that this was completely unexpected to them. But since that win, Stan has been good. He's been solid, but he hasn't become, you know, he hasn't turned into Djokovic. He hasn't turned into Nadal or Federer. He's made the quarters at some slams. He's won one tournament. He's taken some bad losses. You know, he hasn't gone on to be the next dominant player. Cilic is a little younger. I think Cilic, because if he can keep serving the way he's been serving, he'll be a force all the time. But just judging by the way Wawrinka sort of came from, where he came from and where he is now, I could see Cilic. I don't see him winning another slam necessarily in 2015, but a guy who's going to be in the quarters and is going to challenge.
Right. Yeah, it's, you know, as you say, the way these two sort of came from nowhere to win a slam, and I guess you think about how dominant everybody else, the main players are in the game, it's almost not even a surprise in a way that there's not that stepping stone from winning a small event to winning a Masters. We always sort of wondering that, like, you don't necessarily have to take these steps when I think things break the way they did, certainly at the U.S. Open like that for Cilic. So we look ahead as well to the WTA and kind of where things really stand. I think, you know, you have Serena winning the U.S. Open. You have Lina retiring now. It's kind of a point to really look ahead to where things will stand. Serena just turned 33 also as well just last week. And we saw this year we had a year of really strong gains made by Kvitova winning her second slam, Bouchard and Halep really putting themselves as top five caliber players and posting, you know, big results at slams. You have some resurgences by, you know, I think stars that we thought years ago had really high potential, Ivanovic, Wozniacki, you know, coming back this year. Sharapova, of course, still in the mix, but a horrific record against Serena. I mean, you know, of those players, I mean, where do you see a really a true challenger to Serena, or is it really, no matter how much we maybe talk it up, it, could it still be business as usual, like kind of Serena and really with, you know, the, whoever is playing as well that week?
Yeah, I think I would bet on business as usual. 2 years ago, we thought we were looked at Victoria Azarenka as Serena's next challenger. She had won the Australian Open. She definitely challenged Serena in the finals of the U.S. Open. But then she's been injured. She was injured a lot this year, and she seems generally injury-prone. Last year, we looked at Li Na. She was going to be the next challenger to Serena. She finished number two. She gave her a good match in the year-end finals, and then she won the Australian Open this year. And now she's off the tour completely. So I think the next person that would come to mind to me would be Petra Kvitova. She won Wimbledon this year. She is having a good fall so far. She's the type of player who can hit with Serena. She's not going to be blown off the court.
She's always played well indoors, too, where these events are going to be.
But then when you look back a couple years ago, she almost finished number one in 2011, had a great fall, and then really didn't do much after that. I don't know if it was the pressure or she's just not that consistent. So I would say Kvitova seems like the person to really look at as a challenger to Serena, but her history doesn't really tell you that she can sustain that. When you look at somebody like Halep, she's still a question mark. She's had this great year, but it's just 1 year. The sample size isn't that big for her. We'll see whether she's always going to be struggling a little bit because she's just not big enough to overpower somebody like Serena or some of the other top players. It'll always be a battle for her.
And where do you sort of see, you know, Bouchard, speaking of with Halep, as someone who I think those two will probably be even compared going forward as kind of making these leaps here, but two very different players. And I know you're working on a lot for Bouchard. You know, how do you, I think, see her really developing? And because there, you know, she is still so young, and with this year's worth of experience, I think there's a lot to be said for that. Kind of getting some of these, you know, crucible type matches really under your belt, win or lose. And you know, maybe, you know, she clearly knows where the ceiling is for her, and it's, you know, it's getting over that last hump. But how do you see her kind of playing out in the near future?
Yeah, sure. You know, the good parts about her: she's smart, she's as we've heard she has good composure, she is definitely committed and dedicated to getting better, she's confident in herself. But I guess the one problem is if she has an off day, unlike somebody like Serena or Kvitova, she can't really hit herself out of trouble. And that's been true for a player like Radwanska, also a smart player, a little smaller, but we haven't seen her go on to win a Grand Slam. Bouchard attacks more and has more of an opportunity, you know, to do that. But it seems like the really big hitters are the ones who win Grand Slams, the Serenas, Kvitova, Azarenka to a certain degree. So I think we'll see about Bouchard. I think she can win a Grand Slam because I think she'll be consistent and she'll always put herself in contention. I don't see her having a lot of huge ups and downs. And then she'll just need a break at the end of a tournament.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing actually about all this is that I feel like the retirement card has occasionally been bandied about for someone like Federer, especially when he had a really lull year in 2013. But I think we may have wondered where Serena was going to go a few years ago, and you know, how kind of her motivation for everything. And since those points, I think it's only been more apparent that Serena's possibly even more motivated than ever to keep playing. And I haven't heard anything about the sort. They're both, you know, both 33. But I think the interesting thing about all this is that we really don't have really any idea when Serena will want to stop. And there's certainly been little evidence of her abilities waning, and I think that's the great unknown about all this. Is as much as we think about the unknowns of who will catch up to, who will compete with Serena, I think she remains the biggest unknown in all of this, and that's possibly why it's kind of really hard to wrap our heads around.
Yeah, I think Federer is, you know, if Federer had remained number one all of these years and hadn't had any, you know, and hadn't been sort of had the type of competition that he's had from Nadal and Djokovic, maybe we wouldn't. Maybe we would all be. We wouldn't really talk that much about Federer's retirement. We would wonder when he would ever lose. We wonder if he could go to. He was 36 or 37. But that's the way it's been with Serena. She hasn't. She's always kept herself above any serious competition. She's been number one the last 3 years. She's any time that she's been challenged or had some bad losses, she's come back and shown that she's still the best. There is really nobody else that you would say, if they're playing equally or if they're playing anywhere near their best, that is going to beat Serena. You wouldn't say that about Federer these days anymore. So yeah, you could. I mean, who's going to come along and beat Serena? At some point she'll have an injury or she will get tired of it. But as of now, there's just really nobody that you can. There's no way to even say that she's going to be finished when she's 35.
Right. We mentioned Federer. Let's end on Federer's. I have to say for some, Federer does not win a Grand Slam title this year, but this could still actually end up being one of his most, I think, satisfying years, and he really is going to have, of course, the chance to get, the last card played here with the Davis Cup Final, something that he's put a lot into this year, and him and Stan in Switzerland draw an incredibly tough challenge to finish what they started here. They'll play France in northern France in Lille in a huge 27,000 seat arena. It's going to be on clay, and France will of course have its usual very talented roster to choose from upon this tie that comes right after the World Tour Finals. We've seen Switzerland really come from. We were wondering if Roger was going to do this at all, to kind of digging themselves out of a really unexpected hole against Kazakhstan, to cruising here into the final. France, now they're, I think, living up to so much of the hype that has always been bandied about with their players there. I guess first, how do you see this perhaps playing out? This is very early to talk about it, but I think the bigger question is, Does Roger really, really need this win for any particular reason, or just looking at how his year and really how his career is playing out here?
Yeah, I think he's been accused, even by Wawrinka, of putting himself above wanting to play for his country. I think that's something he wants to sort of dispel and put an end to. And that is what Federer has done over the years. He prioritized his own accomplishments, his own tour career over playing Davis Cup. He always said he would keep Switzerland in the world group, but he rarely played the opening rounds because it was, he felt it was too much. I think this is something that he can put that aside. I think he wants to win the Davis Cup. Early in his career, he was definitely dedicated to the Davis Cup. He's always, whenever he does well in it, it's almost as if he's won a Grand Slam. He definitely puts a lot of stock in it, loves to play for his country, at least in the Olympics. So I think it is important for him. Virtually all of the great players on the men's side have a Davis Cup title, and I think that would be a big career capper for Federer. It doesn't take any away from him individually if he doesn't, but it's definitely something extra for him. And it probably comes as a surprise. They saw this as the perfect opportunity when Djokovic didn't play for Serbia in the opening round. It was the perfect time for Federer to announce that he was going to play, and they've had a great draw and they're going to be tough in the final. And as for the final, it's going to be really hard to, I think that's a complete toss-up. I'm not even sure who would play for France, but Wawrinka and Federer versus, say, Tsonga and Monfils on clay in France. I think that's an excellent tie, and I have no idea who would win.
Yeah, it's obviously incredibly early to even talk about it. I guess the one thing for France I think about it is how that I think you can put in their favor, not only the home court and the home fans, but you think about Davis Cup the last few years, and you know, if you take away the Spain's victory in 2011, a lot of the Davis Cups, Serbia, Czech Republic, have been won by with teams featuring players that really have not been hadn't been able to really grasp it on the main tour themselves, but have used Davis Cup as really a platform for their best tennis, really. You know, Davis Cup, this happened before Djokovic's win there. That happened before really his great run to becoming, I think, the player that he is today. And you saw that the last couple of years with the Czechs, with a two-man team, which is essentially, what Switzerland is carrying out. But you seem to wonder if maybe, in particular a player like Monfils, like this is almost perfectly suited for a player, someone like him who just loves to play to the crowd, and he's not going to get a more partisan crowd and a more raucous atmosphere than he's going to see in a late November there. So I think there is a lot to be said for France and what they can offer and what they can throw at what is obviously a great team in Stan and Roger.
Yeah, I think you look at Tsonga has beaten Federer at the French Open. Monfils almost beat him at the U.S. Open this year. Both of those guys have done well at Roland Garros. They have never won, and at times it seems like they've succumbed to the pressure, but they've also been inspired by the home crowd, and that would be even more true, I think, in this match.
Yeah. Well, good. Steve and I will be back next week as well for more podcasting. We're going to keep things going through the fall here and touch on all the big tennis topics of the week. So until then, for Steve Tigner, I'm Ed McGrogan here at the Tennis.com podcast.
You've been enjoying the Tennis.com podcast. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.